up on the little thing, right?
And then I open it in a new window, the tab, okay. Open it in its own.
And the little app that transcribes might be a little slow, but I'll figure that out afterwards, so that's okay. All right, so for this oral history, so our interest is really just to look at the ways in which COVID has affected different people of faith in a variety of different religions and see how people have reacted to this thing. And so I suppose my first question then is, how has the spread of COVID-19 impacted the way that you reach out to your parish or talk to people in your religious community?
That's a pretty good question. Within our parish, we have different groups. We have a men's group, a women's group, and stuff like that. The one way we've reached out is through text messages and emails. But one of the things that I noticed with our parish specifically is for the parish to do it, it's been a lot more difficult because people's phone numbers aren't correct, emails aren't correct. So every time they've tried to do a mass list, it hasn't worked out very well. So much so that even this last weekend, our priest had a flyer go home with us to update all of our information because it's just been really hard. One of the first things they were going to try to do as we opened the church back up, because we were closed for a while, was to do it alphabetically and then either email or call those families, text them. But the numbers were so wrong right off the bat, we never really got around to it. So right now they're trying to go through and get everybody's numbers updated and correct, emails address updated and correct, so they can make the master list, I think, to do that. But each of the individual groups and the leaders of those groups have everybody's emails within that group. The only problem with that is you only get the same people that normally go to church or normally participate in all the church activities are the ones that are still going, and the ones that come occasionally or only go to church and don't participate in all the other church activities, they're kind of left out. They don't know when mass is, they don't know when things like confession are, and all that sort of stuff, just because they're not going to mass regularly, and they're not getting information. The only plus side to that is that every day on daily mass is recorded and streamed live on Facebook, so we can get some of the information there, and then Sunday mass is streamed live on Facebook also.
That's awesome. So you've been able to use different like social media platforms in order to stream the same kind of services. Is this something that you guys were doing prior to COVID, that was also an option, or is this something new
when COVID hit and they started closing down churches, there was a panic because, you know, I feel bad for any religious leader trying to lead their flock during this crazy period because you would think as a country like America, we'd have better communication lines set up. But I think if you look at it historically speaking, we were probably better at it when we had phone trees and stuff like that back in the day during the Cold War, you know, and stuff like that. And we've gotten communication's great, but it's also, I think, created a lot of emptiness and a lot of individuality that breaks up that community thought a little bit, like the church community itself. So yeah, we've taken advantage of stuff we could take advantage for, but like our email or our website's not that great. It's changed hands and who's been in charge of it. So as different people come in charge of it, it's, you know, I think it's changed on how they use it. They've tried to narrow that down, and one of our deacons is responsible for some of the stuff on there now. It's helped out a little bit, but it was a drastic change, and it was a huge learning curve.
For sure. And like with this, now that you've kind of recognized this, do you feel like this is something that within kind of the church leadership that they plan on continuing to use these kinds of platforms or having somebody that's more frequently updating those kinds of contacts?
I hope so. I hope that we do a better job of updating contact and updating those platforms. I do see an increase. So what was interesting is when we started to live stream the mass, I actually think initially we had an increase in attendance because now you can sit at home and go to mass, and the bishop has given us a dispensation. So a dispensation is the right of the ability to stay home and not have to put yourself in danger by going to mass. because in the Catholic faith, the Sabbath is a holy day, and if you don't go to church on the Sabbath, which is Saturday night through Sunday, if you know Jewish history, when the Sabbath starts, stuff like that. So if you want to go to Mass on TV, you can do that. And I think originally numbers were pretty high. You could look at the counter of the people that were actually logged on and watching, and it was higher than I thought it was going to be. But I think as COVID has drawn out, those numbers have dropped off too.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. I mean, there's more people going back to church now, and we have more people attending Mass regularly. But I don't think the numbers would match up to the total number of people that were trying to do it online, and now they've just kind of slipped away a little bit too.
Yeah, it's like maybe initially there's kind of that novelty and it seems like a great idea, so you get kind of more buy-in in the beginning, and then as it becomes kind of just more of the casual, then people are like, ah, I can go look at it later, and so I could see that being an issue.
Yeah, the nice thing about the Catholic faith, though, is that historically speaking, there's been several Catholic news stations, Catholic channels that you could get the apps for, stuff like that, and watch Mass from your house every Sunday for people that are like invalid and stuff like that, that can't actually get to church. We have several news organizations and church organizations that actually live stream. I've been live streaming that for several years. Network like EWTN and the Catholic Channel and Ave Maria Radio and a few others are really big, and they reach a lot of people globally. So we had access to some technology and access to like Sunday Masses only. Some were doing daily Masses that you could log into, but on the parish side of it was very difficult.
So on a larger scale, there's always been some, or not always, but there's been a longer history of, you know, at least being able to tune into Mass, but as far as the local parish and doing local community activities, that's where it's been tough, and
yeah,
this has
been
a new
huge,
experience.
A huge hurdle to try to climb.
Yeah. Do you feel like with the, like when you look at the types of people that are coming or not, do you feel like there's any particular group that you've noticed that have been shocked that have they're not coming, like whether it's youth or the elderly or anything like that?
So it's interesting. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 church services. We have one on Saturday evening, and then Sunday at 8 a.m., Sunday at 10 a.m., and then the Spanish Mass Sunday at noon. And I typically go to the Saturday evening Mass, and I participate quite a bit in it. I'm a lecturer. I've helped out. I usher when people are not there, and just a few. I do a lot of church anyway. But right now, in the last maybe month or so, regular attendance on Saturdays has been pretty stable at about 70-ish. Which is close to, for the size of our church, with keeping distancing 6 feet and stuff like that, has been pretty close to as far as we can get. And it's the same people that were coming to Mass before the pandemic, for the most part. There's a few people that aren't coming because of risk health and stuff like that. Other than that, though, I don't know how. I've been told that, like, the 8 a.m. Mass on Sunday morning is very poorly attended. All I talked to Father about the other day, says, well, our deacon, it wasn't too bad, but, I mean, I don't get up at 8 on Sundays anyway, so it would be hard for me to go if I was what I usually get to. So I don't know.
Yeah. Do you feel like many of these new kind of social media outlets are going to become a staple of the church kind of moving forward then?
I really hope not, because in the Catholic faith, our sacraments are very, very important to us, and receiving Holy Communion, receiving absolution and penance for going to confession, those have to be done in person. You can't do confession over the phone. You can't do confession over Zoom because of possible people tapping into it and stuff like that. And you can't receive the sacrament of the Eucharist. You know, you have to be in person for that. And that's a big part of our faith. And to stay online would, I think, do damage to our faith greatly.
I think that's really interesting that you bring that up. I think when most people think of religion, they think of it as just like learning stuff, you know, learning the doctrine. And yet, like you say, you know, there's a lot more to it. And I would say particularly in the Catholic faith, the emphasis of the sacraments and these kind of you know, ordinances or rituals that are performed that really can't be substituted with just some kind of service like this.
It's hard to do a baptism over the internet.
Yeah, that's for
right?
sure.
It's hard to, you throw water at your TV screen. So, yeah, there's definitely that. You know, I teach the confirmation class, which is also another sacrament, and that's actually a 2-year requirement of learning to be confirmed. You know, and we've had to make adjustments for that, too. We went all the way down to just 12 students per class. We have 6 feet between each student in the class and stuff like that. And it's been kind of difficult.
Are there some of those kinds of rituals that have had to, like, stop entirely as a result of it or been put off until they could find a solution for it?
There has. When they first shut down, obviously communion was done and hearing confessions were done because everything was shut down completely. And then we've moved into a phase where some people are able to go back to church. Confessional is done sometimes. It depends on the state and what the local laws are in the state laws, stuff like that, and the rules that mayors and governors are placing out there. Luckily, the Supreme Court made a nice ruling yesterday for religious faith, especially in New York City. But we actually had you could do a drive-by confession. Confessions have to be in person. But they wanted to keep the distance between the person going to confession and the priest. So the priest would sit outside the parking lot, and they would pull their car up next to him, and they'd roll the window down and do confession in the parking lot, which is crazy. But, I mean, because those sacraments mean so much to us, people are willing to do that. I think there's a lot of frustration out there. There's a lot of people that would like to go to church. They would like to have it more normalized. They would like to see sacraments, but they're also, a lot of people are scared because of COVID and the possible spreading and stuff like that. One of the things that we've done specifically in our diocese, so the diocese is the whole state of Utah, we're required to receive communion in the hand. Historically speaking, you receive it either on the tongue or in the hand. Some people think that in the hand isn't as reverent as on the tongue, because you could drop it and how reverent you are when you go up and stuff like that. But all the way back as far as the 2nd century, there's been guidelines for that, to receive it in the hand by some of the early church fathers in the 3rd century. And there's been a lot of consternation over people wanting to receive it in the mouth. And actually, what's really weird is you have some people in some places that will refuse to go to church because they can't receive it on the tongue.
Wow.
Which I mean, for me, I think it's—I don't know if I call it petty, but I think it's a lack of understanding of how to do it reverently in the hand, as opposed to reverently on the tongue. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's a way to do it reverently, and I think you should be able to swallow your pride a little bit, and if you want to really receive the sacrament, receive the sacrament. You know, I don't know. Interesting.
And is that something where, because I wouldn't even have thought of that, but yeah, there's probably some people that think, like, you know, maybe the kind of, they would see it as like the compromises being made in an effort to perform these, you know, they don't think that it's like good enough or acceptable. Has
yeah,
there been?
And that's just poor catechesis. That's poor understanding of the faith.
Yeah.
You know? I think in recent years, catechesis has been poor. I know that my catechesis was poor. Now that I teach it, I wish I would have learned the stuff when I was a kid that I'm teaching now. I don't think either I'm ignorant and I forgot that I learned it, or it was never taught to me to begin with. But I'm kind of a smart guy. I think I would remember some of the stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. You know, they say ignorance is bliss, but I don't know if ignorance is going to get you to heaven.
Do you think that kind of recognizing this maybe from a church leadership standpoint, have they maybe rethought, like, maybe there are some of these things that we need to go back through and evaluate how we've taught?
Yeah, I think even a little bit before COVID, but definitely because of COVID, I think church leadership is starting to understand that a lot of people don't really understand, you know, how to do the sacraments correctly or what the church moral standings on certain issues are, or, you know, what the catechesis is. You know, we've got the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which was propagated by Vatican II back in the 1960s. We had a catechism before that called the Baltimore Catechism, but the Catechism of the Catholic Church is a pretty thick book, but it's got all the rules of the church in it, and I would dare say the vast majority of Catholics have never opened one.
Yeah. I guarantee that that's not just a Catholic issue. I'm sure that's a general problem.
Absolutely, and so that response kind of falls on us, the laity, right? And we're not doing a good job of that either. Obviously, I think, you know, if more people were true to their faith, we'd have a lot less problems we're having in society today. You know, the two greatest commandments that Jesus gave when the Sadducees and the Pharisees tried to corner them were, number one, love God above all else, and number two, love your neighbors, you love yourself. If you love your neighbors, you love yourself, we're not going to have rioting, we're not going to have protests, we're not going to have racism, we're not going to have all that other stuff, right?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So you do like a teaching class, right, for like youth. Have you mentioned any of that with them, or have you gotten a feel for what they feel like?
You know, I the youth have a hard time. I don't know. It's probably not just in the Catholic Church, but they think church is boring. Why do I have to get up on Sunday and go to church and stuff like that? So, you know, you got to kind of try to sell it as a catechesis teacher, why it's important, stuff like that. You know, and that was actually one of my lessons I did this last Monday was, you know, loving your neighbors, you love yourself. You know, and part of the thing I talked about is, you know, you have to understand what loving yourself means also. You know, it means treating your body with respect. It means, you know, doing what's morally right. You know, how can you treat somebody else that way if you don't even treat yourself that way? You know, and I think that has been a new direction. I think some of the stuff the church is doing is going. At least I'm hoping so.
Yeah. For the, as far as like COVID's concerned with either youth or elderly or just kind of the people that you know, what kind of an impact do you think COVID has had on people's faith? Do you think that with kind of these events like catastrophe that people are drawing away, or maybe in what way? And I'm sure it's kind of a combination, but maybe in what ways have they drawn closer to the faith and maybe moved away?
It's interesting. I think it kind of ebbs and flows. I think when you have a pandemic like this, I think a lot of people turn to faith quickly. The problem was that as this happened, turning to faith was a hard thing to do because churches were closed down. You know what I mean? I think they kind of butted heads there. I think in a regular situation, you know, take the World War. You know, what was church attendance during the World War? Did it increase or did it decrease? I'm assuming that it increased, right? But during a pandemic, I would assume the church attendance would increase except for the churches were closed. So I think you get a lot of pushback because of that, and a lot of distrust in the government, and I don't know. I know that in the past few years, at least for Catholics, I mean, every church has problems with membership leaving, right? I don't think the pandemic has helped that at all. But what I have seen is that those that still try to go to church and those that remain faithful, their faith has been deepened. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So they're stronger in their faith if they've stayed positive and stayed going to church if they could, or watching on TV, and they're taking time to read and listen to Catholic radio and stuff like that. So
that's interesting, because I agree. I think, like you said, you know, when you have a catastrophe, there's a lot of people I think would naturally turn to religion, but it complicates it when they can't turn to religion, at least not in the way that you want to because of the pandemic, and that would probably lead to, like you mentioned, that frustration.
I think that's why you're seeing nationwide so many churches speaking out against the government as the restrictions are handed down. You know, it's like Governor Cuomo doesn't allow churches to meet, but he's got supermarkets open, and, you know, he lost in that Supreme Court case this week. The churches are going to remain open. You know what I mean? It's interesting, and I think some governors, some government officials are figuring it out. The mayor of L.A. this last week closed everything down except for two things, protesting and churches. They're both First Amendment rights. And I think a lot of Americans feel shaded that they are not able to experience their First Amendment rights, where other businesses are being able to be left open. So I think you see a little bit of a groundswelling of faithful in general pushing back against the government and some of these regulations that are being pushed on, not just in the Catholic faith, but I think in other faiths too. People want to go to church, and the government's not letting us do it, so it becomes, okay, where are we at as a society?
Yeah, and that's interesting. You know, as far as the political nature, it's like people don't want to politicize it, but when, you know, a shutdown does close down your church, I think in a way you have to kind of politicize it. Do you feel like that's created any division within the parish where, like, some people are more willing to go along with it and other people are not, or?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that I think there are some people that are, have divided some of the people within the parish. I have a really good friend that believes that everything about COVID is a government hoax, and it's a farce, and it's not as bad as it seems, and that we're bowing down to the man. And I understand that point of view. If you look at the total statistics and the total number of people that are dying and the total number of people that are being sick, and I'm not saying that's a good thing. It's bad when anybody gets sick, and it's bad when anybody dies. But if you compare it to things like the Spanish flu or even the normal flu, the numbers aren't that dramatically greater, and in some cases they're smaller. So the politicizing of the pandemic has, I think, divided people within the parish for that reason. You know, whether to wear a mask or not, there's people that don't like wearing the mask. They don't think they should have to wear a mask in church, and there's been a lot of pushback in that. We offer free masks as you come in if you didn't bring one or you forgot one, and some people have turned around and walked out and they wouldn't come into church because they don't want to have to wear a mask. You know, but if you're, the hard part about that is if you're truly Christian, you know, wearing a mask is an act of charity. It's not for your protection, it's for the protection of everybody around you. And I think we forget that. You know, I think pride, one of the seven deadly sins, definitely plays a huge factor into that. And it's unfortunate.
In your particular parish, like if someone were to walk in and decide not to wear a mask, do they have to leave? Or have you been given much guidance about that?
They would be escorted out because that's what the bishop has said. That's the rule that the bishop created. And he is our shepherd. And, you know, you can politically not like it, but are you going to follow the rule of the Catholic Church and the rules that your shepherd has set down? Or are you going to be hard-headed and stubborn and not wear it? Most people, even my friend that thinks the pandemic is fake, he will wear his mask at church. He doesn't like it. He hates it, but he does.
Yeah, and I like how you mentioned, I'm sure you talk about this in your church, but like you said, it's an act of compassion. You know, maybe you don't think it's necessary, but there are going to be people that are here, so for their sensitivity to demonstrate that brotherly love to them, you're going to wear it to try to demonstrate that we're going to all be in this together kind of an attitude.
Yeah. How hard is it? It's not like, okay, I don't like it. Yay.
Yeah.
You know, for Catholics, church is an hour. It's not that hard. If you don't like going to church for an hour, go up to the Newman Center, and it's 35 or 40 minutes. Deal with it.
Yeah.
It's not like where the Oneidas are meeting, you know, 7 hours a day, or the Shakers or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Have there been, like, other, aside from, like, wearing a mask, are there any other, like, restrictions that have been placed on the church?
So we also have spray bottles at the front of the church. You're required to spray your hands with whatever it is, the gel that, you know, they use to kill the germs. And then before we go up to communion, we're required to wear our face masks as we're walking through the church while we're going up to communion. And then the communion servers, including the priest and the deacon, so usually in the Catholic faith, it's the priest and the deacon that give out communion, but we have what's called extraordinary ministers that also give out communion just so it speeds the process up a little bit. They'll go up and receive their communion, and they've got to spray their hands after they receive their communion before they start handing the communion out to everybody else, so that their hands are clean beforehand. So that's one of the things they put in. Like I said, the other restrictions are 6 feet between people and the family, the reduction in the size of the campuses and classes, you know, things like that have happened.
Do you feel like there have you?
That's a burden too, because you have to open up more classes for catechism to get all the students educated. we've had to do online for almost, or take home stuff for almost all the other classes except for the sacramental classes. So First Communion and Confirmation are the only catechism classes meeting right now. You know, and that's third grade or fourth grade and seventh and eighth grade. All the other classes are meeting right now, and those teachers are doing assignments that they give to them to go to home and bring back. So it's had to change a lot of stuff that way, too.
Yeah. Have you had many people that you feel like have expressed, like, gratitude for the willingness for the church to comply and to, you know, to at least get something on the field to do as much as you can?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of people that are super happy that church is open. And it's a very warm feeling. We have a pretty tight community, especially, I mean, it's probably like a lot of other churches. There's groups of people that hang out together within the church, and, you know, when you've been quarantined and pushed away, it's nice to see each other. But another thing that's happened is that we can't meet the foyer. We can't stop and greet each other on the way in or the way out. We can meet outside. But as winter comes, that's going to be much harder. It's going to be colder. People are going to get the cars windy. But yeah, there's a lot of gratitude. And there's a lot of people that wish they could go that just won't go because they're afraid of COVID. You know, if you look at the demographics of the Catholic Church here in Utah, it's a lot of older people. You know, it's a lot of post-40-year-old people and a lot of much older people, too. That are Catholic. So they're afraid to come to church. They're afraid of, you know, getting the virus and stuff like that, and that's understandable.
Yeah. Has the church tried to, I know we talked about this a little bit in the beginning, but has there been any way, especially for, like you said, that older generation that may be a little bit more concerned coming in, to try to facilitate that kind of camaraderie or, like, other kind of, you know, instead of hanging out in the foyer or doing that kind of social gathering, something else for them to do to replace that?
Unfortunately, no. It's just been so hard because I think one of the issues that the Catholics have here in Utah is you have to remember going to Pennsylvania, like, we live a long ways away. Like, it takes me 15 minutes to get to my parish. So organizing events, it's not like it's a community event that you can meet down the, you know, at the park on the corner and do something. For Catholics in Utah, it takes a lot of planning and a lot of organization and a lot of stuff to make something like that happen. I'm not saying that we can't, and maybe we should, but I think just with what COVID has been and how it's treated people and how people are tired and worn out and they don't want to, you know, I think it would be very hard to do. And I think even that, the people that are afraid to come to church would also be afraid to need to do.
Yeah.
The other thing that's important, too, though, you know, one of our sacraments is the sacrament of healing. It used to be called last rites. It's not called last rites anymore. It's the sacrament of healing. If you are sick, you can call our priest, and he'll show up and give you communion and confession and you know, do your last rites or do pray for you for healing. And he'll do that at a drop of a hat. Him and the deacon. And they have ran into problems with people that are sick in the hospital, whether they can come in or not because they have a family and stuff like that. And that's an interesting issue, too. You know, at what point do you restrict clergy from being in the hospital and giving people last rites? You know, not every church does that, you know, but the Catholics sure do. And it's a responsibility that our priests hold very dear and use his heart. So, you know, not being able to do that and have the government. They know it's frustrating for them, but it also puts them at risk too. I mean, our priest is 54. Our main deacon, who's taking a lot of responsibility, he's 72 or 3, I think. Our other deacon's in his late 60s. And our newest deacon is 60. So, you know, they're old. They're in the high risk area, but they are willing to go, and they know that how important faith is, and that, you know, one thing I've been trying to really push lately, at least as I teach, and I think a lot of other Catholic students too, is that we're only here on earth for a brief moment, you know, and we're in eternity forever. So is it more important to focus on what it's going to be like forever, or is it more important to focus on your 80 years here on the planet? So, you know, I think that's been a little bit of change in the focus of a lot of the teachers that are teaching and stuff like that as we move forward also. And our priests and deacons really understand that. They really want to make sure people are comfortable in their, you know, dying minutes if they're dying or if they're going in for major surgery. to receive communion and been blessed before that happens with the age, you know.
Do you feel like there's been like an uptick in the number of people like asking, reaching out to the priest or you know, the deacon to come and assist?
They're always just busy. So I don't know that it's been more or less busy than usual. The only downside of that is when they've been exposed to somebody for 15 minutes, now they've got quarantine. And in the state of Utah, we have limited number of priests and deacons, right? So if our priest gets quarantined, now, you know, what do we do as a congregation? You know, we can have communion services with hosts that have already been consecrated, but it's not a regular full mass, and deacons can do that, but it's not a regular full mass. You know, there's only so many substitute priests in the state of Utah that can fill in for the priest community. So.
Do you think that creates any hesitancy at all among people to call on the bishop, knowing that, or the priest, or any of them?
I don't know. I don't think it's caused any hesitancy for the priest to do, you know, what they've been ordained to do. I think they're still willing to go out and do it. I think they're cautious and they're wary of the possibilities of what could happen. But I think our bishop has done a very good job of trying to maintain continuity throughout the state for the most part.
Okay. For COVID, I think the religion plays such an important role in, you know, you hear a lot of people that are struggling with depression, with rise of things like suicide, and, you know, especially with the isolation that a lot of people experience. And even for people that don't have a chance to go to work because maybe they've been laid off or they've been furloughed, you know, sometimes work becomes that outlet that they need. So what kind of value or why do you think religion might become so so important in kind of stepping in and filling that or continuing that role of helping these kind of people out?
I think faith gives us comfort. I think it gives us more comfort than anything else. Going to work's nice and being there with your friends and stuff like that, but being able to rely on faith and the benefits of the faith, I think, are really important. I've heard studies where people that are depressed and or have anxiety, if they take medication for it, they can be good. If they take medication and increase their faithful life, it's even better. But ironically enough, if they just increase their faithful life, it actually does better than the medication and the faith. If they just dive deep into their faith, so I think faith healing is super important.
All right, awesome.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Sweet.
So, yeah. Do you feel like within, specifically in Catholicism, are there any particular stories that you feel like are especially important in a time like this to give comfort?
I think, you know, a lot of those stories would be pretty similar across the Christian faith, and whether it's the New Testament or the Old Testament. For those that endure the hard times, you know, there'll be greatness on the other end. The meek shall inherit the earth. If you look at the Israelites as they came out of Egypt, you know, and the 10 plagues that Moses brought upon Pharaoh, and, you know, they were able to get out of there. I think that most Christian faiths are going to have those same stories, those same biblical events that really gave comfort to those that were away. You know, when you receive manna in the desert and God provides for you, I think those are all things that we can rely on as we look at New Testament verses and even Old Testament verses.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Let me just double check. How do you feel that the pandemic has impacted the way that you view religion today? Now that having, you know, experienced kind of what you see within your own congregation and even just within your own family, has that attitude changed or any of that?
I think I'm more frustrated with the way the government has handled it with restrictions and stuff like that. I think there's been a huge shift in our society lately anyway towards a more socialistic ideal, and one of the basics of socialism is construction of the nuclear family. You know, if you go to some of the basic socialist theories and thoughts, and I think the only way to combat that is through faith. I think faith is going to be the thing that's going to be able to combat the socialist movement in the United States and where it's happening in other countries too. It's ironic, though. We use faith until we don't need it anymore. We think we don't need it anymore. We can rely on it, and we can preach it, and we can believe in it. And then once everything seems to be better, we seem to lose our faith a little bit. So, I don't know. I hope that the pandemic does bring people back closer to the faith. I hope that they realize that, you know, the material things of the world that we have that seem to go away with the pandemic, whether it's jobs or the amount of money that we have or our savings or whatever, that all that's fleeting, and that faith is and the eternal reward is much more important than what we have here on earth.
Do you think that because of the pandemic, has there been, with like your own parish, any kind of, you know, community efforts with kind of an interfaith, joining with other religious denominations to try to express that same kind of an attitude, like the importance of faith, regardless of what denomination we're a part of?
I know that in recent years, regardless of the pandemic or not, I know that our bishop has reached out to other faith communities within the state of Utah to create some ecumenical learning, ecumenical-based ideas across the board. So I think that's a very positive thing. But parish-wise, like I said, our parishes are so few and far between. And then if you look at the other states, but I think Utah is, what, 5% of Utah's Catholic.
I'd be surprised at that.
And then, so who else, which other Christian faiths are we going to reach out to? We've done some stuff with the LDS churches right across the street from ours. They were really helpful when we were building the church and our new parish and everything like that. But there's even fewer Episcopalians, there's even fewer, you know, Lutherans, there's even fewer Baptists. So they're even sprouted even more. So it'd be interesting. I think faith leaders would have to do it within the state and not on a parish level just because we're so spread out.
That's probably true. Probably more of like a from the top position, kind of working together. Do you feel like a joint effort like that, or even do you know if there has been any kind of movement for them to contact, you know, local political leaders or state political leaders, just to kind of get that voice out to let them know? Because I wonder if some of them think, you know, it is just about, you know, you can listen to a lesson online, but I think they don't realize kind of the necessity of being in person and that kind of an impact.
You know, I don't know. My assumption in the state of Utah would be that with the government state of Utah being so LDS centered, and the governor being LDS, I think they probably have a closer connection with that. Would have an easier time of pushing those ideas, and I think that's maybe why the restrictions in Utah aren't as bad as some of the other places. I think the LDS church has taken the lead in that, and thankfully so. I know that the LDS Church has had their own restrictions they've had to deal with, and rotating of times for them to go to church and all that sort of stuff also. But I think we're lucky to be in a state like this where faith is important and the government knows that faith is important to us. So, but I know that I'm pretty sure that our bishop meets with the governor. I know that, you know, that representatives that will go to the state Congress and talk about stuff. So I know that does happen. I'm just not part of that whole state.
That's awesome that they do have that contact, and that hopefully there's kind of those good feelings and willingness to kind of work together to try to help, you know, make sure that it's not just an LDS thing here in Utah, but that all people can show.
You know, one of the questions that was on there, and I thought was pretty interesting, was the one on charity and how we've responded with families that are needy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The response historically for Catholics has always been very good. You know, if you look at the stats, historically the Catholics have given more to charity than any other religious faith, you know, in the history of the world. And we still do a lot of that right now. We had a drive for families for Thanksgiving, and we fed families that way. We'll do the same thing for Christmas. And the few people that do show up for Mass give way more than you would expect. the families that went home with turkeys and everything from Thanksgiving drive was that they got enough food for a month, each of those families. And then you know, you have things like CAP Community Services that people donate money to all the time, and they're out in the communities helping out. And you've got the Lantern House, and, which I think you give money to and donations to. And you've got the soup kitchen down in Salt Lake that feeds homeless people three times a day, every day of the week. And, you know, a lot of that stuff is financed through our regular donations to the church on a weekly basis and a yearly basis also. And other donations directly to some of those organizations.
That's good to know, because even though in a time where a lot of people are hurting financially, it's nice to know that those donations haven't, you know, completely dropped off. And it sounds like from what you're saying that it's actually increased. A lot of people are being more generous.
Yeah, I think people realize that other people are struggling. Those who have are giving more than they have. It just feels like it a little bit. The amount of, like I said, the amount of food that we had had dramatically increased. The weird part was is that we didn't have as many families that requested food. So the ones that got the food got extra because we didn't feed as many as we thought we would. But that's okay, too. I'm glad that people aren't needing food. Maybe they're afraid to come and ask, though. That could be a whole another issue.
Yeah. Do you have within just kind of your local area, like I'm sure, like you said, like, you know, leaders checking in on those that they know would probably be, you know, hurting more? Or like, would you hear about a family that's, you know, maybe somebody's lost a job, been laid off for a little while?
I think our parish does a pretty good job of knowing the families within the parish and if there are problems. I think there's enough general concern for one another within the parish that we check up on each other regularly. Because, I don't know, it's like 7 degrees of separation, right? Everybody knows Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Within so many steps. So I think word of mouth travels pretty quickly for people in need and stuff like that. You know, we still do funeral services and stuff like that, and they can call the parish at any time and ask for help, and what help we can give, we do give. So.
It sounds great. It sounds like you've got a really well-connected, you know, kind of family unit in your parish.
Yeah, we try. We try. wish more people would attend. We have lots of families that are registered at our parish, but church attendance is low.
Yeah.
It was low before the pandemic. The pandemic definitely, I don't think it's helped out. Like I said earlier, I think those that are faithful have deepened their faith. It just hasn't spread a lot.
Yeah. I wonder if when this is all over, whenever there is a sense of normal, you know, how many maybe people that are not currently coming for a variety of different reasons, if you'll see any kind of spike, or if you feel like it'll be just kind of the same, you know, the same that are probably attending now will be the same that'll come.
I think we'll have an increase in church attendance because I know we have parishioners right now that are aching to come, but because of fear, because they're immune compromised and stuff like that, they just don't dare come to church right now. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll have an increase in church attendance at least for a while.
And I wonder, even just those that are, like you said, you know, on the lists, but are, for whatever reason, you know, maybe have been less active for a long period of time, if maybe once comes back and, like, if there's, like, this appreciation for it, like, oh, now I can, maybe I appreciate it, yeah. I want to go back.
Yeah, I hope that the Holy Spirit does reach out and touch those people and touches their hearts and realizes that, you know, they made it through the panic because of the grace of God, and that they'll be appreciative and come to church and be grateful and thankful and increase membership and attendance and stuff.
Okay. Hey, well, I really appreciate all your support. Maybe just as like a final question, is there any other kind of final thoughts you had on the pandemic or on, you know, how it's affected faith that you'd like to kind of leave us off with?
No, I just think it's unfortunate. I think my biggest gripe is the strife between local governments and the ability to attend church. My biggest area of concern is where you can have tattoo shops open and bars open and grocery stores open, but you can't have church open. That frustrates me. I think it's a violation of our First Amendment rights. I think it's a violation of people's faith rights in general. I think it's a violation of what America was based on. And it frustrates me. When things like the Supreme Court rules against New York City and their faith requirements, it makes me happy.
Yeah. Hey, well, I really appreciate everything you've done for us, and I'll talk to you later, man.
Great. Yep. Thanks for the interview.
Hey, you too. Hey, you too. Hey, you too.